Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our guest today is Sam Husseini. He's got a new one running at consortiumnews.com, and we'll have it at antiwar.com for you tomorrow. It's called Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Sam?
Good to be with you.
Good to finally talk to you after all this time. I've read you and followed you on Twitter for quite a few years now. And you've helped me out with a lot of guests with your morning email too, by the way, which I really appreciate.
Sure, from accuracy.org. Always a pleasure, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy, and this is particularly regarding what is to be done about the Islamic State in eastern Syria and western Iraq, or what used to be those places anyway, am I right?
Yeah, I think it still is those places, but yes.
Okay.
Whenever the Mideast comes up, generally almost, and especially when ISIS comes up, Sanders has basically been saying the Saudis need to get their hands dirty. These are rich countries run by rich families, and the future of Islam is at stake, and the soul of Islam is at stake, and they have to get out there, and they have to solve this problem themselves. That's almost a kind way of paraphrasing what he's been saying. What's wrong with this is that he's basically calling for more Saudi intervention in the region. Saudi Arabia is right now bombing Yemen. It is, you know, devastating that country that borders it. Saudi Arabia has been the haven for all of the ousted Arab dictators from Tunisia to Yemen after they got ousted. Mubarak was about to go to Saudi Arabia. They didn't want him to resign at all, and he finally did, and now he's, you know, sort of under pseudo house arrest in Egypt, and now they're backing the military dictatorship in Egypt. They've been sort of the most anti-democratic force in the Arab world here, and for decades now they've backed the teachings of the Wahhabi sect of Islam, which has basically given rise to Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And so why do we have a presumed progressive like Sanders, who's, you know, so articulate on, you know, economic issues and other issues, saying that we should turn over a large part of our Mideast policy, which I have a lot of problems with, to the autocratic Saudi regime.
Yeah. So back to Sanders in just a second, but just to elaborate your point one step further, too, I think the most charitable explanation of the rise of the Islamic State and the Saudi role in that would be OOPS, and that their support for Ahrar al-Sham and other so-called, mythical moderates and whatever this whole time in the civil war in their determination to oust Assad has led to this massive blowback in the form of the Islamic State. And that's, that I think is the most charitable explanation when, you know, we have Michael Flynn's affirmation of the DIA report and its importance in explaining that this is exactly what's going to happen if America and its allies continue upon the path of supporting the rebels in Syria, the memo from August of 2012.
Yeah, it's either, extreme bungling, oops, as you say, or an insidious attempt in order to create failed states in the secular republics of the Arabic world, like Syria was.
And to create an Islamic State in its place, in fact.
To either create an Islamic State in its place or a failed state, chaos, which I think, it might be, serviceable to some players in the region and outside the region as well. Mm. And so you have this proxy war. And
But now, so Sanders is saying the Saudi ought to send their American trained and armed army to go and fight the Islamic State that the U.S. and Saudi at least accidentally created.
Yes. Yes. And he tacitly concedes that our interventions in the Middle East helped create ISIS. It's kind of a bizarre thing because he's willing to admit that much. But then his response is that we shouldn't do this. Why should our boys from Vermont go over there to fight? Why should we bankroll this? Let the Saudis bankroll it. Let the Saudis man it. And in effect, he doesn't say this explicitly, we'll give diplomatic cover, maybe air cover, and so on and so forth. So it's sort of like trying to, work out a scheme whereby we can continue the war machine without as much money and without any U.S. blood, you know, sort of let them kill each other kind of thing. I'm sure you saw the Sony hack email where, you know, the head of Sony actually said, you know, let them all kill each other. That was his analysis of the Middle East, and this is sort of being echoed, in a sense, by Sanders here. What's insidious about this is that, you know, Sanders is now the most prominent progressive on the national stage. So, if people want to give kudos to his campaign for raising issues of income inequality and so on, whether he wins or loses, he's putting those issues on the agenda. Well, I think he's also doing damage here. You know, he's been scant in his foreign policy pronouncements, and this is the foreign policy pronouncement that he has been most passionate about. You know, he's not out there really railing about even the military budget, even from a finance point of view, he's not railing about this. Yeah. And he certainly isn't, you know, being Martin Luther King and being talking about the madness of militarism, and he's certainly not being Jeremy Corbyn. If you follow what Jeremy Corbyn, who's fighting for the leadership in the Labour Party in Britain right now, he's really going after the Saudis and British arming of the Saudis, which is tiny compared to the U.S. arming of the Saudis.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, underlying all of this is he has to know better than this. I mean, you don't have to, they call it calculus or whatever, but this is basic arithmetic here. The mm-hmm. Saudis invade Iraqi Sunnistan, and then what do the Iranians do? Right? I mean, there's nothing complicated, even, you know, pre-algebra here. This is basic math. You're talking about making the war worse.
Right, right. And you know, sort of you got the militarists on either side tacitly benefiting from that. Are we asking what Sanders is doing? Is he doing an oops? Is he being careless here, or is he being insidious here? I mean, what struck me is part of his pronouncements here. Some of his most viscerous pronouncements have been when he's gone on Wolf Blitzer's show on CNN. And Wolf Blitzer, as people may know, has a fairly long history of being not just pro-U.S. military intervention, but specifically fairly pro-Israeli. And there is a tacit, not so tacit anymore, Israeli-Saudi alliance in the Middle East. And so, you know, you in effect have, you know, Sanders using a platform in the U.S. media that is quite pro-Israeli to push this line as a progressive line, that this is what progressives should call for. This is very destructive in terms of what our movement thinking is going to be regarding the Middle East and what a possible meaningful dialogue can be between people in the United States and people in the Arab and Muslim worlds. Yeah. That the Saudis should run the show? Hell no. You know, Sanders is saying that the Saudis need to go out there and get their hands dirty. I'm saying the Saudis' hands are plenty dirty as it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
let's stop it.
All right, now, so I got a bunch more for you. With Sam Husseini on the other side of this break, y'all, so stay tuned. He's at the Institute for Public Accuracy, and you can find this article at consortiumnews.com, Sanders Screwy Mideast Strategy. More in a minute. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here.
It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, you guys, welcome back. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I'm here live on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to 2 Eastern Time, 11 to 1 Texas Time. LibertyRadioNetwork.com, etc. I'm talking with Sam Husseini about his piece, Sanders' Screwy Mideast Strategy, and it's about Bernie Sanders and how little he's had to say about foreign policy. And then when he does talk, it's this madness about how the Saudis ought to invade Iraqi Sunnistan to get rid of our Islamic State problem, which makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, one thing, there's a lot of things we could, a lot of different directions to go here, but one thing about Rand Paul, about Jim Webb, about Bernie Sanders, all these guys right now who I think we all know better than the stupid crap that they say about foreign policy, they could all be doing really great right now. They were all blowing a perfect opportunity. You know, even by 2008, Giuliani's 9/11 shtick was already old. I mean, they beat that thing completely to death. And any honest human who takes a look at America's Middle East policy can see just it's totally foobar. The entire thing is contradictory and ridiculous, and we're fighting for Iran and Iraq, but we're fighting for Al-Qaeda against Iran and Syria, and for and against both in Yemen, and people are dying in huge numbers, and it's madness, and stop it, and how in the world can you justify it? Lindsey Graham right now is at 0%, because that's what even conservatives think about the empire in the Middle East right now. And nobody will get out there and be Ron Paul about it and say, just come home, forget it. Be Switzerland from now on.
Yeah.
Just blowing the opportunity. I mean, Jim Webb, Bernie Sanders, any of these guys, if they would come out screaming and yelling about it and fight about the empire right now, they could, you know, I don't know if they could win over power, but they could win, you know, millions of supporters among the population and win over more and more people to peace anyway.
Right. And I think part of it is, you know, a feeling about and a knowledge about how deranged U.S. foreign policy has been, and part of it is just simply looking for authenticity. So you get, you know, people are now gravitating, largely in desperation to Trump simply because he seems like he's somebody who's, you know, at least saying what he thinks, however twisted that might be.
Right.
I think the question in my mind is, to what extent are they blowing it, or do they calculate that if they were to do that, and even if it were to resonate among the public, that they'll get pounded by the dominant corporate media?
Whatever, they're all going to lose anyway. So what?
Well, yeah. I totally agree with you. I think you're right, and I would one up you in that. You know, if we want to look at, you know, electoral strategies, you know, going forward here, there's a lot of commonalities between the so-called left and the so-called right.
Sure.
I set up a webpage a couple of election cycles ago that I tried to take a crack at. I don't know if we've ever talked about this, Scott, votepact.org, which encourages people to team up. You know, I mean, you know, the thing that keeps, you know, disenchanted Republicans in shackles is saying, oh, I got to vote for the Republican because I can't stand the Democrat. And Democrats in shackles, I can't stand the Republican, I got to vote for the Democrat. So pair up and siphon votes from each of the establishment candidates in twos, in pairs, to an authentic independent run that is based on, you know, reasonable principles of foreign policy, of restoring constitutional rights, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a real opening for that going forward, you know, in the general election. But, I mean, I wonder if, you know, if candidates are concerned that if they were to articulate that kind of thing, that they would just, I mean, they wouldn't just lose the election. They'd get drummed out of public life. You know, it would just be nonstop ridicule.
No, I don't think so. I think that those fear. I mean, basically, it's like this: they gotta appease power, and so the masses of votes don't mean nothing if you can't afford to advertise to them anyway.
Yeah,
and
but
so
I mean, there is a substantial opening here. I mean, it's restricted in many ways, but you have the internet, you have independent media, you know, there, and you have the possibility of fundraising. Like you said, Ron Paul. I had some disagreements with Ron Paul, but I thought on a lot of foreign policy stuff. On a lot of the, you know, the surveillance state and constitutional stuff, as well as trade. I mean, there's a lot of issues of agreement between left and right. He was great, and he was able to raise money.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to raise millions of dollars and money bombs and stuff like that, which Rand Paul hasn't been able to do nearly as effectively so far. And I think in part it's exactly what you're saying, that he has not really taken the positions, and he certainly hasn't been articulate about it in terms of stop the empire, restore constitutional rights, and so on.
Yeah. All right, now, so what has Bernie Sanders had to say? I mean, he's been in the Senate a long time, and I admit I just haven't watched him that much. He's just another Democratic senator to me. But can you tell us what's his record on, you know, the rest of Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Libya, Syria interventions?
Sure.
I know he was against Iraq in 2003.
He voted against Iraq in 2003. He was for the Kosovo bombing in 1999, and one of his main staffers resigned as a result of that and put out a letter attacking it. People can find that on the web. He was against the Libya bombing by Obama and NATO, and he did back the original invasion of Afghanistan. And he hasn't, you know, he's sort of hand and hawed about it, you know, Bush, you know, didn't do it right and so on, but he hasn't, you know, sort of recanted that part of it. He's been...
On Afghanistan, has he expressed any concern that we're still there and that he would like to go ahead and call this thing off now?
Very much. I haven't seen that. I would sort of expect him to if asked, but I haven't seen that. No, you're right. I haven't seen him say that.
All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, he's been, you know, he signed off on the standard thing backing Israel's bombing of Gaza last year, but he was the first senator to say that he wouldn't be there when Netanyahu addressed the Senate recently. I don't know if he ended up being the only senator, but he was the first one to say, I'm out of here.
And he's endorsed the Iran deal, but is he really good on it? Do you know?
On what?
On the Iran deal. Has he made a big issue out of
He hasn't made a huge issue, but he's definitely for it. Oh. I don't think that he's, you know, he's sort of challenged Hillary Clinton on the, you know, Keystone Pipeline and a couple of other things. I don't think he's gone to the mat on the Iran deal as yet, but he's definitely expressed support for it.
That's good on the pipeline. I mean, that thing is a private property destroying monster right there. That's crazy. That's
right.
That's Trumpism right there. So that's good that he's good on that. That's a big one too. That's not nothing.
Yeah, yeah. He's been good on it, and he, you know, sort of forced Clinton to at least sort of pose as being for it for the time being. So yeah.
All right, and then that's good. He's for the Iran nuclear deal, and then on Israel Palestine, I guess I read that he's for a two-state solution, but. What do you think of President Sanders? Would he, you know, try to force it?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to read the tea leaves. I mean, I you know, I'm always wary of saying somebody's for a two-state solution. I mean, everybody says they're for it. Netanyahu says he's for a two-state solution. It's not meaningful.
Well, and apparently Kerry really tried in good faith, but just didn't have the backing from the president and had completely, you know, obstinate Israelis, and it would have taken real pressure from Obama to make them get out of Kerry's way, and he didn't do it, so.
Right, right. But that's, you know, ultimately that ends up being your position in a way. If you can't, you know, if you're in a position of power and you can't do it, or you don't want to expend the political capital to do it, then it's not really a position. It's a rhetorical.
A slogan, yeah.
Right. But he did... You know, I mean, he had some mild criticism in terms of disproportionate and so on, but he backed, he signed off on the resolution that virtually all members of Congress in such a circumstance sign off on when Israel was bombing Gaza for 50-some-odd days last year. He signed off on that, as well as most of the rest of the established members of Congress. It's reading tea leaves right now. I mean, people have gone back and found statements from him that were fairly critical of U.S. foreign policy, fairly critical of Israel.
Well, now he's touring around. Is he not taking questions, or nobody's asking?
Oh no, he's taken. He didn't take my question when he was last in D.C., but he's been taking some questions.
But I guess from the media or from regular people, and are regular people not pressing him on this stuff?
Maybe it's more constrained than I'm seeing. I mean, I'm not necessarily out there in Iowa and so on, so I'm not sure how many questions he's taking. But I haven't seen a lot of people raise stuff. Now look, I mean, when the Black Lives Matter folks got into his face, he changed.
Yeah.
You know, he's making that part of his stump speech,
right.
And I think that's what people got to do. You know,
right.
to raise issues of peace and justice. Politicians are ultimately wind vanes, and it's ultimately up to movements to make them move in the way that they need to move. So I think that's part of the dynamic that has to happen here.
Yep. And yeah, you know, like you're saying, there's a huge realignment just waiting to happen here. We're not the worst of the left and right getting together, like conservative
right.
Democrat Clinton or liberal
exactly.
Republican Bush, but the best of the left and the right in a Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich kind of way.
Exactly.
And I guess, you know, I liked past tense to think that we could at least maybe have something like a watered down version of that, at least rhetorically, between Rand Paul and Jim Webb. And make the argument, I mean, my way is, you know, we should have the Democratic Republicans should be the party of the people, and then we should just have the war party of death and taxes for power, for the bankers and the arms dealers and all the special interests. And then at least it'll be clear who's on whose side. We want peace and our Bill of Rights, and they want to take all our money and kill all the Arabs with it. And now we know who's who. And then that way, and they could insist, it might be funny if they did it right, that Jeb should just run as Hillary's running mate, because
right, right.
These guys are the centrist extremists, and hey, we're the centrist moderates. We're tired of all this extremism and want to get along, right?
Right.
Really realign. And now, I mean, that's not like they'd get anywhere and win as a, you know, independent candidacy, but it sure could, you know, help people, I think, you know, confuse them and then straighten them right out about what priorities are most important to us and what we really agree on. And it's just, especially now with the economy the way it is, Sam, it's such a shame to see, you know, like right-wing militia guys and whatever getting more and more racist and more angry at,
right.
at powerless minorities and left-wingers getting more and more angry and scared of powerless right-wingers, when the problem is power. That's who's the enemy, and it should be really the 99%, not meaning the fringe of the left, but really the 99% versus the state and the private interests that own it and vice versa. I mean, that's our enemy, and it's a tragedy we continue on like this with regular people hating each other while they keep going to the bank with all our money.
Right. And that's, you know, the Wall Street bailouts was another great left-right issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, what I usually call it, you know, they're the establishment center and there's an anti-establishment center. You know, we can't determine, you know, what who Jeb Bush's running mate is, although what you're saying makes perfect sense. But we can, if we can get organized by the time of the election, try to get behind somebody or buddies who can manifest that, who an authentic conservative and an authentic leftist can both get behind and say, I'm not going to vote for the leftist can say, I'm not going to vote for whoever the Democratic Party puts forward. I got someplace to go.
Yeah.
You know, someplace meaningful to go.
The real crisis is we don't. I mean, the real crisis is the best we have would be Sanders and Rand, and they suck. And they do nothing but run toward that establishment center seeking approval and pandering to them and betraying everybody else. So who are we left with? Nothing. Ron's retired. You know?
Right. Ron's retired, but, you know, it's a big country with millions of people. and I think that, you know, if
well,
we
Well, but when we're talking about presidents, we have governors and senators running for president.
Right.
That's about it, you know.
Right. But, you know, there are, you know, there are lots of retired senators. There are lots of people who are, who have a public persona who could be brought into the public arena to be the face of such a movement.
Sure would like to see it. Well, yeah. And I appreciate the background knowledge for knowing better who to oppose and why.
Yeah.
That comes first. Finding somebody to support comes later. But hey, listen, thanks so much for coming on the show. I've already kept you over time here. I'll let you go, but I sure appreciate it, Sam.
Great to be with you, Scott.
All right, Joe. That's Sam Husseini. He is at the Institute for Public Accuracy, and this one is at consortiumnews.com, Sanders Screwy Mid East Strategy.
This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com.